You're listening to Event CEO, a podcast for executives who are looking to maximize their event ROI through business strategy, technology, and innovation.
Hello and welcome to the Event CEO podcast. Thank you for listening and sharing part of your day with us. We're truly honored and grateful as we know your time is precious. I'm your host, Rebecca Linder, founder and CEO of Linder Global Events. And today we have with us, we're so pleased, Anthony Schopp, co-founder and chief strategy officer of Social Driver. Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Anthony is a pioneer in the field of digital media and has sparked innovative strategies that have produced remarkable results for some of the world's most beloved companies and organizations. His views on digital media have been featured by the BBC, CBS, and USA Today, and he's been featured as a keynote speaker at conferences across the globe, from Singapore and London to New York and Miami. Well, we're thrilled to have you on the show. Thank you for taking the time.
You bet.
Okay, so Social Driver is a digital agency. What does that mean, and how do your services tie into the events industry?
Well, our vision of the company is to help companies connect with people today. Notice I didn't say connect with people online, which is maybe what I would have said a few years ago.
Okay.
And I think you really can't connect with people today without some sort of digital social component, because that's how people are going to share information with their friends. That's, you know, the average American spends at least an hour a day on Facebook. It's hard to find another platform that they spend that much time with and engaged, right? They're not passively consuming, they're scrolling and they're being active. So as a digital agency, our challenge is to figure out the best ways to connect with people in today's world. And that means for us, we have to do a lot of work building websites and different type of web applications and experiences. In social media, we do training, we run the campaigns, and then our digital content studio produces a lot of videos, graphics, memes, animated GIFs, the type of content that we can use to connect with people today. And, you know, it's fun to figure out how, when you layer that into other traditional ways of communication that have been around much longer than digital has, you can really up the results. So with events, for example, we've seen a lot of success with digital and social media to promote events, to help reach people so that they attend, because you want to get people there. And then during events, people are going to have their phones, their tablets, their computers out, and they're going to multitask whether you want them to or not. So you might as well create opportunities for them to amplify your message at the event. Allow them to connect with other attendees through social media. Give them a reason to share that they're at that event so that they, their colleagues and their friends are jealous and they want to come down the street the same day or come next year or whatever it may be. So there are a lot of exciting ways, I think, that a digital agency can support a successful event strategy to do more.
So make the distinction for me and the audience, frankly. So there are platforms, CRMs, different platforms that, you know, offer that marketing component of getting out the message or, you know, finding attendees and bringing them back. How are you different from that? Because that's not just a platform of any kind. I mean, you're actively creating a campaign. Is
yeah.
that correct? Is that the distinction?
Yeah, well, I think there are a lot. I mean, every day I hear of some new tool in social media that can pull analytics or that can automate a process. You know, I just think I have a toolbox that's been sitting in my closet for years and I haven't, you know, hammered one nail probably. You can have tools and it doesn't necessarily get you the results on how to use those tools right. and how to achieve, you know, a new remodel. And so we use a lot of different tools, but we really start with understanding what are you trying to accomplish and then what are the tried and true, but also newer ways that you can apply strategies to achieve the goals you're looking for and then execute on that. So sometimes we might just train existing staff on how they can use the tool set that they have so that they can be great community managers at their own events. And we've done that. But a lot of times, especially at events, I find the full-time staff are very busy. They're getting pulled in a million directions, making, you know, unexpected things pop up. And they aren't necessarily able to, with focus, identify the best content to post and share, make sure that the sponsor logo's positioned in the background so when that gets retweeted 10 times, they can go back to the sponsor and show, look, this is an additional reach that we got you beyond the live event. Things like that. There's a strategy that goes into them, and we specialize in that. And no tool is going to do any of that for you. Tools can make things a lot easier. Tools can make things a lot faster. At the same time, sometimes tools can lure us into thinking that we have a strategy when we just have some tools.
Are there any events that come to mind, specific events where you really leverage that strategy extremely well that you can give us a little bit of insight into?
Sure. Well, one of the ones I'm most proud of is we've worked with multiple clients at South by Southwest Interactive. That is, you know, this amazing event where tech and innovative people come together. It's huge. There's a lot of noise. There's a lot of distraction. You might pay for a very expensive booth, and some of your target audience doesn't even know you're there because there's just so much going on. Well, we work with the Washington, D.C. Economic Partnership. That's the group that really evangelizes for doing business in D.C., moving your business or opening an office in D.C., attracts tech talent to D.C. And, you know, they do all kinds of economic development things, but tech is a big focus for them because that's a growth market here in D.C. and an area where we've done really well. So they did a great job for the last couple years of having a physical presence. They had the WeDC house, mm-hmm. and they had events, but they wanted to use digital and social media to drive people to those events and then also to amplify the message, because not everybody who was following the conversation was there physically. They were back in D.C. or right. they were in Houston or they were in New York. And so we worked with them to develop the strategy. The campaign was called WeDC, so that makes for a great hashtag, right?
Right.
Says a lot in four letters. Hard to, you know, we lucked out on that one. And we were able to find people who influenced our target audiences and really find smart ways to engage with them. One of the main things we wanted to do was to elevate people, because when you elevate someone else, you make them look good to their peers, they feel special, they engage back with you, they join the conversation. And I think, you know, probably one of the things I tell marketers a lot is, in today's world, it's not just about us telling a story and pushing it in one direction. What we have to do is remember we have an audience and they're writing their own real-time autobiographies. And probably no better example of that than South by Southwest, when everybody's so social media savvy, right. and they're learning. So the question we had to answer was, what do we do to become worthy of being part of someone else's autobiography? How do we become a character in that chapter? How do we get permission to be in the selfies that they're taking? Whether we're there or not, they're writing the post, they're taking the selfies. The question is, can we be worthy of being part of that story? And with WeDC, it was a tremendous campaign with a great result. We saw thousands of people using the hashtag and engaging and talking about the WeDC conversation. People here in DC, but a lot of people at South by Southwest, great attendance at the booth. And the WeDC hashtag rated higher than many of the major corporate brands that were spending a lot of money to sponsor. I mean, I'm talking Google, Samsung, Esurance. There was a Ad Age did an analysis of the top brands at South by Southwest, and we beat every single one of those brands on at least one metric, and many of them we beat them on multiple. So we're looking at reach, how many people saw the messages. We're looking at engagement, how many people took some action. They liked, they replied, they retweeted, they followed. And then how many people actually used the hashtag. And the success was amazing. I mean, the mayor's talked about it, the deputy mayor's talked about it. So that's one that I'm really proud of, because we've just seen that you can accomplish things that were probably unimaginable a few short years ago if you think creatively and you apply the right digital and social strategies to what you do.
And one of the things that I draw out from that is one of the key differentiators for this campaign was the fact that you guys identified influencers.
Mm-hmm.
How does one, I mean, you know, the general event audience in terms of those who are hosting events, right? So we're not even talking about the events industry. We're talking about people who are hosting events. And
sure.
Our audience is made up of CEOs. It's made up of, foundation heads and executive directors, and as well as the event audience. I mean, how does one find those influencers? Are there tools to do that? Do they have to go outside? Can they create an expectation internally around how to do that?
Well, yeah, it's a great question, because there's lots of ways to slice and dice that.
And maybe define influencer.
Sure. So I'll talk about one specific client where we have worked with for a long time, and we've done this. But we work with a group called Change the Equation, and that is a national STEM, so that's science, technology, engineering, math, advocacy group. And they were created by a coalition of companies like Intel and Bayer and all of these wonderful Fortune 500 companies that want to see more young people pursue careers in STEM, and they realize that diversity and equity are a big part of that, and education. So they do a lot around that. When we started working with them, they were working with somebody else before us that was, you know, running their Twitter account. And they didn't feel like they had much of a strategy or knew what results they were getting. And we said, well, what is your goal? Are you trying to communicate with the general public about STEM? And they said, no, we want to really be leaders in this community that's already talking about this. People that eat and breathe this regularly, that's our target. And offline, they did that very well. They would have salons, STEM salons, they called them, where, you know, members of Congress would come and top staffers would come. But online, their presence was very latent because they were just posting links to their, you know, website with no strategy. So we said, well, the first thing we need to answer is how many people are talking about STEM on, let's say, Twitter, for example. So we did analysis, and I think it was something like how many Twitter users used the hashtag STEM at least once over a month period or something like that. And it was at the time, and it probably would have grown since now, but it was about 15,000. So that gave us a universe to start with, right? There's only 15,000 people that regularly talk about this. And if we want to talk to the people who are in the conversation, that's a pretty good place to start. And then our question was, who influences that conversation? Now, you could go out
and... Outside of the 15,000? Or who, could it be within?
Well, of the 15,000, okay, who are most influential to influence one another, but also influence people that are... we should want to influence, even though maybe they don't use the term STEM.
Okay.
Maybe they talk about technology or policy or something. Now, you can go use a number of tools to say, okay, which of those 15,000 people have the most Twitter followers? And that'd be one single metric. And that might be useful, except one of the results might be New York Times. And New York Times, because they're posting news and they happen to use that hashtag, isn't probably going to retweet you, because they're really, that Twitter account exists to push news in one direction. So if you just measure influence by one single metric, often you end up getting skewed results. So we added some different criteria in, and we also had to look at who are people who have an influence on this policy. And I remember one example was somebody who was a leader at a think tank that did a lot of policy, but the CEO had his own Twitter account, but he only had like 200 followers. Well, if I'd only ranked by followers, he wouldn't have made it even in my top, you know, 50%, but because of who that person was and who followed him and who engaged with him and the affiliation he had with whichever group, I forget which one it was, he was important to us. So we looked at multiple criteria and we came up with a list of the top, it was about 100 influencers. And we said, you know, our strategy now is not going to be to just post any content. It's going to be to engage with these 100 people, to post things that they will care about, to mention them, to like their stuff, right? To engage with them, because if we engage with them, they're gonna see us and look at our stuff. And that was very effective. And one of the things we measured was how many of those 100 followed us back and engaged with our content. And on day one, it was zero, you know? And then as we went forward, it moved up. So that is what I would do for an event. And I would say, if I were, whether I'm in-house or an events firm and I'm running a conference, and if that conference has existed before, and let's say there was a hashtag, maybe it wasn't promoted very widely, but some people used it, I would say, okay, number one, how many people used that hashtag last year? Maybe I had 10,000 people at my conference and maybe only 50 used it. Okay, well, that tells me 50 people who are active, right? And then I would say, of those 50, who are the most influential? Who are the top 10? And I might look at how many followers they have. I might look at the other content. I might look at who they are, their personal profile, because again, they may have a small following, but be influential.
Right.
And that would tell me the list of, let's say, 10. And I'd say, I'm gonna design content and spend time engaging with those 10 people. I'm not gonna just focus on any old content that I post out there. I want those 10 people to talk about me, because if they have conversations with me, their networks will see it. And they influence those networks. And that'll be a really powerful way for me to make sure that I'm talking to the people I want to talk to. If I went to a networking event, I'd look at name tags. I would look at people who I recognized, and I'd spend time talking to the people who mattered. Well, that's what you have to do on social media. It's not very different, except obviously there's the ability to amplify that in much more than you could as a person, you know, work in a room.
So as the chief strategy officer of your organization, why should this conversation, let's kind of elevate this, why should this conversation of events be had at the executive level and no longer sort of at the managerial administrative level around this particular time? What results should they be looking for?
Yeah.
What can those results be that really are, make it worthy of that level of conversation?
Sure. I think the senior leaders need to set a vision and need to set goals. Sometimes you'll see social media activities and digital activities and other activities in an organization too being managed by people who are lower level, and they don't even understand why they're doing it, except that somebody said, we should do this. And so you have to have vision and goals at the top level, but the senior leadership doesn't necessarily need to understand exactly how it's all going to fit together and work and the mechanics of the difference between a retweet and a reply. They just need to understand what they're trying to accomplish so that their team can be empowered to do that.
And in terms of ROI, what can they expect in terms of, or what should they be thinking about at that
sure.
level in terms of expectations yeah. for the digital strategy?
Well, you know, there's a number of things that can fit back with the organization's goals. So one is just brand marketing, right? I mean, if you want to be very amorphous on goals, and then I'll get very specific with kind of ROI, companies invest in their brand all the time. They redesign their logos, they update their website, they do brand advertising. And if your market is spending a lot of time on social media and increasingly, and they're engaging, if you're not there, you're going to be invisible to them, and the relevance of your brand is going to, you know, decrease. So there's an argument to be made that you should use the tools that your audience is using to be relevant. But I know that's difficult to measure the ROI on unless you're maybe going to do a brand survey to see how you stack up to others. So I've seen for events, we've worked on events, another client at South by Southwest, where it was recruitment. Their ROI was measuring the number of candidates who kind of put their name in that. It wasn't at the event itself, it wasn't applying. It was sort of getting in the system to then apply later. So we measured that leading indicator. We didn't measure the 6 months later how many of them applied. And we measured the increase in lead generation in the pool. So that's a very specific thing you can do. We've also worked on projects where we've helped to promote an event, and we measure traffic to the website, we measure registrations with a certain discount code, we measure return participants sharing content with their networks, because often at these types of things, people are friends with other people who go, there's some peer pressure. And so that's something with ROI, is I'm going to do this as a promotion. And I've seen some folks shift some spending from direct mail they've done to promote conferences to social. I wouldn't recommend doing all or nothing. We've seen some interesting things where people will see and engage with the content on Facebook at home, at night, on their mobile phone, but that's not when they buy the ticket to the conference that their company is paying for. The next day they go back to the office and they find that email from a week ago, and they click the link from a week ago, and then they have their company credit card out, they have their travel stuff out, and that's when they make the arrangement. So you have to look at kind of the whole picture of how you need multiple touch points, and the touch point on social may not necessarily at that moment convert, but it's the reminder of, I need to get that ironed out, and then they go back to the office and they finish it up.
Very interesting. So let's talk kind of back up to communications and messaging. So, you know, have an event, it's going to turn into obviously a live event. There's the run-up, there's the day of, and then there's the post. How does one need to think about, if we want to leverage social media and the digital strategy in the event itself, how do we need to be thinking about what those messages are long prior to it beginning? And also, how then does it get activated on stage? Like, how does one best do that in order to leverage that technology and that methodology well?
Well, let me try to answer that.
Let
me know if I'm going in the right direction. Yeah. But for message, let me tell you, for example, so we've worked with the National Association of Convenience Stores. They have a large trade show, great organization. You know, convenience stores are about 5% of the U.S. economy. People forget that, but they sell all our fuel and they're everywhere. So it's a big audience. Well, that show rotates from across three different cities, Las Vegas, Atlanta, and Chicago. And what they find is Las Vegas, like for many organizations, tends to be the most popular location in terms of how many people show up. And there's probably a number of reasons for that. They don't have to spend as much time selling the destination of Las Vegas. But when they had the conference in Atlanta this year, they discovered that some of the attendees might be interested in coming to the show and participating. But, you know, they have to choose which trips they go on, and this is going to be some, you know, probably some personal evening time. And they didn't necessarily see Atlanta as attractive of a destination for entertainment as Las Vegas. So actually, some of our messaging centered around the destination and reminding people or informing people about some of the really cool stuff in Atlanta, and that specifically related to the desires of the target audience.
So that was to drive just attendance.
Yeah, that was people who probably our return show attendees that would say, yeah, that's going to be fun. That's okay. Yeah, I'm going to go. Because it's probably people who are on the fence of, eh, I could go, I could not go. I go every other year. Maybe I go. And so the messaging, you know, that direction we got from our client, and we were able to sort of verify that through the content that we tested, that, yeah, that was popular content. People did want to find out about the cool restaurants and the things that they could do in the evening and the sporting event that they could stay through the weekend to attend. And so that was an important aspect. So understanding your audience, your market, understanding what motivates your market, I think is really critical. And one of the things that we've done is we've developed a framework that we use. We call it the 6 E's of engagement. So we have Elevate, which I mentioned earlier, which is making people look good to their peers. Empower, that's more of an intrinsic motivation. People want to be part of something, not necessarily because it's going to make them look good to others, but they're going to feel good about doing it. You know, maybe it's even solving a problem. There's entertain, which is making somebody smile, keeping their attention. There's educate, so that's teach them something they didn't know. You know, you can walk from the convention center to this great thing that we think you'll really like. I mean, that can be a number of things, but kind of teaching them things that they actually would care about. You can entice, so make some sort of an offer that they just couldn't refuse, right? Sometimes that's a discount.
Right.
Sometimes that's
access of some sort.
Yeah. Just something that, you know, okay, I have to click. I mean, I see it a lot nowadays with news where they used to give away the punchline and the headline, but now the headline often is written in a way that you have to click to find out because they want you to click. Yeah. So that can be enticing.
So then take me from, so this is actually a great conversation because it's so interesting, because I was thinking more call to action when I was thinking a message, like who are we as an organization? How do we get that message out? But you're right. The first order of business is getting people to attend.
Yeah.
So is there a thread from, okay, so here's who we are and here's what we're trying to accomplish as an organization, but goal one from a digital media or a strategy perspective has to be to get people there. So we've got to create an environment there. Is it then inauthentic or incongruent to now focus on, once they're there, how do you transition over to sort of what that core call to action is or that core message that they want to communicate?
I don't think it's inauthentic, because I think that a good strategy puts people at the center. And to promote an event, if you want to put people at the center, what that means is understanding what motivates them and highlighting what they care about, not what you care about. And that's one of the things that organizations struggle with in marketing is, hey, we're excited. We have a new logo. Hey, we have a new convention space. Hey, we have this great thing going on. Well, why is that relevant to your audience? And if you can find a way to make it relevant to them, then you're keeping them at the center. But a lot of times organizations put themselves at the center and try to act like they're putting people at the center, and they really aren't. It's really them at the center.
You are right.
So if you then keep with that of putting people at the center, what does that look like during an event? Well, there, you're helping them get the most out of it. And then you're helping them not just promote what you're doing, but promote what you're doing in a way that asks them for their feedback and makes them look good. So for example, come to my event because we're going to have these great sessions. Okay, now you're in the session, not, hey, tell your friends that we have great sessions so that they will want to come to our event, but share your knowledge from the session. We're listening to you. We're going to elevate that on digital display. So we're looking for the best quotes. Every time you do this, you're going to be entered into a contest. Or as simple as, when you start sharing stuff, we retweet you. We like your posts. Showing you that we actually do care about you. We actually are elevating you, right? The national conference has taken little old my comment, right, and elevated it. So I feel special to everybody else. They chose my comment. And so now I feel good and I want to share more because I want to be further elevated. And if you spark engagement from your other attendees and more people engage with that person, again, they then feel special. I'm part of a community. I'm engaging with people who aren't even necessarily in the room with me right now, but you know, we're having conversations. So you can add a whole layer of community that just couldn't exist. I mean, you can only meet so many people physically in person, but you can also connect with people digitally. And then that often will turn into, hey, let's rendezvous here. We should meet in person. I liked what you had to say.
How literal does one have to be, like an organizer, an executive from the stage, to let people know that this exists even?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you're talking about only a small percentage or maybe a portion of the audience is doing this, how do you get everyone engaged? How do you get them signed on to mm-hmm. the notifications or what's happening and how they're trying to leverage that voice?
Yeah, it's a great question, because I think the job of the event is not necessarily to get people to do things they wouldn't have done otherwise. I don't think the goal is to get everybody to set up a Twitter account, because if they don't have a Twitter account already, and then they do tweet during the conference. I mean, they have no followers. They're probably not going to keep it up. So that's sort of a difficult battle. There's an old, I think it's from like the 80s, model of social change that has been adapted to social media. They call it the rule of 1-9-90. The idea is that in any social movement, any campaign, anything, 1% basically do all the work, right? They're the organizers. 9% might kind of show up, right? So they show up every once in a while, mm-hmm. but they do something. And then 90% just sort of sit back and listen and watch. But they end up having a lot of influence in many ways, but they're not active and they're never going to be. And they've done some research comparing that to social media, and they found very similar. If you look at a conference or an event, you kind of break it into those three buckets. 1% of people are the people on Twitter and on social media that are really leading, you know, the buzz, and they're really generating the majority of content. 9% are people who might have a Twitter account, wouldn't always pull it out, but if you remind them and give them an incentive, they will. So if you're speaking from the stage, you're probably speaking to the 9% there.
So and you were actually saying from the stage, hey guys, we want you to tweet, we want you to engage yeah, actively.
I think it can be good. I think if you just say, hey, don't forget to tweet, that might help a little bit. But, you know, really, if you give people more of an, because again, that is putting your brand at the center. Hey, don't forget to tweet about us because we want it because it makes right. us look good. If you put them at the center, you say, you know, we really care about your feedback and we really want you to share, you know, some of the moments that you most enjoy about this event, because we're going to look at that content and that is going to drive our decisions to make sure that not only this event is as successful as it can be, but future events. Oh, well, that can be empowering, right? Because it's giving me something that I can do to make things better, whether other people see it or not. That empowers. Or if we say every day, so at the NACS show, every day we take the top five people who share like on social media. I don't remember exactly how we measure it, but you know, it's the most influential people each day. And we release a top five list at the end of the day. And people will reply and be like, oh man, I thought I was really good today. How did I not make the top five? People want to be in the top five. So that we've elevated people. We've given them a mechanism that they can look good to their peers and that they can feel special.
Is that part of the entice in terms of, is that an entice?
Yeah, I think entice is a good one too, right? Because you're kind of pulling them in. You're sort of giving them a reason to do something they wouldn't have done otherwise. So elevating entice, because a lot of times, yeah, these E's sort of, there's multiple that go together. You might say, whoever's tweet today gets the most retweets, you are going to win X, right? Well, that would really be entice because I'm not necessarily doing it to look good to my peers. I'm not just doing it to feel good internally. I'm doing it to get something. And so that really, really falls under entice. And I've seen things like that at events where there's some sort of an incentive. Even just knowing, even if you just know that before the sessions begin, there is going to be a stream of photos and tweets from the event that they like, then you know that your voice is going to be heard and you could end up on that. And that, just doing that, not even telling people, just putting that up during breaks and they see it and they know, well, this is coming from social media. So if I share, my stuff might get up there. In that case, you don't need to tell people. And I would argue if you had to choose between having a display like that so that you're showing people that they could be part of it, that you put them at the center, and the flip side of not having that display, but asking them, having somebody from the stage ask them to share, I think the former would be more effective.
How do you bring it alive in an event, actually, visually? I mean, you know, people talk about Twitter falls during a speech, and there's uh-huh. a debate always about how distracting that is versus, yeah. you know, where the focus and attention sure. should be versus, you know, in the networking space. I mean, what's the best way to kind of physically activate this component?
Well, it really depends. I would say, I think that there are a number of things you could do, like having a live Twitter feed during an event, that in many cases would be distracting and detracting from the goal of the event. It's easy to do, right? It's easy to go to that website, set up a free account, have it pull in automatically. Of course, then you don't have a filter. And so if something, you know, stuff happens where they have to shut the screen off. We've all been there and seen that. That may not be the best thing to do. I could imagine scenarios where that could be effective, but I could also imagine scenarios, many of them, where that would not be effective, and I've seen that. I think that using, I guess what I would call dead time, for use of another term, you know, you come into a meal and there's that time that everybody's getting seated and that you're getting the food served before anybody comes on stage. Those are really good opportunities to share content. And you can share the best content from the last several hours and stop it, or you can share live content. I've seen both of those things done. Again, it might depend a little bit on your audience and what you're doing there. But I think that's one good way to do it. I think the other thing is people are going to multitask at your events, whether you want them to or not. You're not going to get everybody to shut their phones off. If you end up in a facility where people can't get cell phone signal or Wi-Fi, they get upset. They're going to be bothered. They're going to step outside because they're going to feel so disconnected, and they're going to be upset with you for not having thought through those details. And so if they're going to multitask anyway, giving them a productive way to do that and saying, best content, we're going to actually do something with this. We're going to listen to you. I find what many organizations do is, again, it's all about them. I want you to tweet because it's going to make us look good. We want people to talk about this because we want to say that people talked about our event. Well, that's very selfish, right? That comes from a very selfish perspective. And first, instead of thinking, why would I give someone in the audience who has a Twitter account but maybe doesn't use it every day an incentive to want to share something? What would empower them? What would entice them? What would elevate them? Make that your messaging. The 1% are going to do it no matter what. So for the 1%, you might give them guidance. That's where, you know, having the hashtag prominently displayed, they're going to share anyway. They'll probably find the hashtag anyway, the 1%. But, you know, making it clear to them that this is how we want you to do it and that kind of thing will help. But for that 9% group, what motivates them? And I think so many companies and all kinds of strategies and organizations and around events, but many things, they forget that we have to find a way to help our audience and put them at the center. That's the important part.
So fascinating. It's so true too. I mean, and it's the same advice we even give from an event perspective as it relates to just the general message that they're trying to put out there. And, you know, a call to action is only meaningful if they care about it themselves. And,
yeah.
And you've got to sort of activate that piece of them, not you as an organization as the vehicle.
And it's not all about digital. It's just about thinking of the incentive. I'm reminded of, you know, back in the old days before Social Driver, I did a lot of independent consulting and communications. And one of the things I did was I produced a small event for a college, William Jewell College, that launched a Center for Justice and Sustainability. And part of it was them partnering with nonprofits in the community. So we did this concert. It was a benefit concert with really cool local bands and a radio partner in Kansas City. And then we had 15, I think, nonprofits from the community that were featured. But this was an evening concert event. And they were on, the way the venue was set up, they were upstairs. So it was a different area. So one way we could lure people up there was with food, but, you know, that could only go so far. And our nightmare scenario was that everybody would come in to see the concert and leave, have no idea why this event happened, what was going on, and they would never go upstairs, and all these nonprofit people would be at their tables, and the tables would be empty. So we had to think, we have a goal here. Our goal is to get people to talk to nonprofits, but we need to find a way to motivate our audience to do it. So we came up with this idea. We created these little tokens. They actually were Honduran, I believe, pennies or nickels from a service group, but they looked like these cool gold coins, but they're like worthless. So it's like a perfect thing to give as a token. And it fit in with the theme of what we were doing. And when you came in and paid your cover for $10, you got two of those tokens. And we said, you have to go upstairs to decide which nonprofit you want to give your money to. So now I've just given you cash and told you, you are the decider of who gets that cash. We accounted for every single token of this event.
Really?
Every person went upstairs. Now, some of them I walked around. I mean, we had great traffic, and they talked to people at multiple nonprofits, and they wanted to learn. And we tapped into this motivation of a choosy shopper. The people who are choosy shoppers, well, I'm not just going to give to the first one. I'm going to go find out. And they did, which is exactly what we wanted. And they had dozens of people who signed up to be volunteers. And I think some people went up and, you know, looked around and grabbed something to eat, and they probably gave it to the first one that they saw.
You're 90%, but you're 10%.
But we got them up there, right. and we had a lot of volunteer signups. And so I think we really saw a big success from that. And that was a total analog thing that we did. I mean, it was back before people did a lot of live social media sharing. Most people didn't have those apps on their phones, and that, you know, it was almost probably 10 years ago. But take that same principle and ask, how would you motivate people on digital? And if you don't have people who are digital and social media experts, they're going to be able to partner with you to think about the workflows and the behaviors that make sense and take best practices and next practices from other things happening. But you're going to know your audience. And that's where we have to partner with our clients. We don't know your audience. You work with them all the time. You know them. We can bring our insights, but we have to combine those with your insights. And then together, we're going to come up with some ideas that none of us would have come up with alone.
And then you had referenced this earlier in the sort of back and forth that we've had. Talk to me about the role of the community manager, you know, in an on-site, in the run-up to an event versus the on-site.
Yeah. Well, in general, I think what a good community manager does is they play the role of gardener, which is they pull the weeds and they water the flowers.
Okay. So this is and, where you curate a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, you want to post good content, and when good things happen, you give those people a, you know, a pat on the back. You retweet them. You reply to them. You promote that. You spend, you know, you, it's the flowers, right? Because people are going to do that more if they see, oh, wow, you actually are thankful and you engage back with me. This is fun. I'm going to keep doing that.
Are you in the room? Or are you back at headquarters?
I was kind of speaking I was speaking a little bit before an event of just in general with a community manager. Now, at an event, a community manager, so we've done this where we've sent people to many events, and we usually have people behind the scenes too. It's for the analytics of finding the top performing content and pulling things and even producing graphics. You know, having somebody off site is actually better in many cases. And so in our situation, we'll often have our team in DC doing that. We don't need them to be on site with a computer setup. The person that's with the phone, that's out doing Facebook Live and taking pictures and encouraging people to take selfies, you know, I would much rather a member of the, an attendee at my event, take a picture and share that picture on their own social media than me take it and just be on my social media. Because the whole idea is making it about the audience. So one of the best things that a community manager can do in a live action event like this is, you know, I'm talking to you, maybe I get your picture, I say, hey, let me have your phone and let me take a great picture of you and I give your phone back to you. Well, you're going to share it because it's on your phone, right? But if I say, great, I posted that picture. Now, don't forget after this busy conference when you have 100 emails in your inbox to come back and find it on my Facebook page, which you don't like yet, and tag yourself. Well, so that's true. Tricky.
Right.
If I just put it on your phone.
Done.
You have it.
So there really is a role for an active community manager walking around and doing versions of that. I mean, actually taking people's phones, getting a picture.
100%. We've been at events where we have certain sponsors who we want to really, they care about the social media impact. They want to see the results. And we might make sure that we really emphasize those areas of the conference or make sure those, you know, again, we position, when I take the picture of you, I make sure the photo's angled so that sponsor logo is in the background and not covered up by your head. That type of thing makes a huge difference because then I have that image and I go show the sponsors, hey, look at this.
What else are sponsors looking for? Great segue, by the way. What else are sponsors looking for in via the digital space at events that fall outside of sort of their normal benefits? Like, oh, yes, your logo will be up there and all that. But, you know, what are other things that can be done that way that can actually, you know, by saying, hey, not only is it up there, but we're actually actively getting photos of people with your, and this is how many people saw it. What are some of other examples of that?
Well,
sponsors are gravitating
towards. At a lot of events, sponsors are tracking traffic to their booths, let's say. And so one of the things that I think is very important to them, are they capturing people and are people, you know, signing up? So we've done some work at HIMSS, which is the Health Information Management System Society conference. And at that event, we've worked for sponsors who have invested a huge amount of money and time and resources into booths. And they do events and they have two goals. One is they want people at this huge event that could easily not even see them to come to find out. And so part of what we help them do is target people, so let's say hospital CIOs, who are looking for solutions in a certain area that they offer, and we're engaging with them, you know, tweeting at them and saying, hey, come check this out, you know, or it might even be we're inviting you, right? This is a close thing, but if you come to our booth, you're going to get something special, and it increases the traffic. So it's not just depending on the foot traffic. Think about it like this, right? If you stayed in a hotel and you were going to go out and get lunch, you know, 20 years ago, you maybe ask the concierge, walk down the street. You might just walk into whatever thing looks good.
Right.
Well, now, before you even leave your hotel room, you do a digital walk by.
Right.
You look it up, and then you know where you're going. And you might walk right by that place on the corner that's had all the traffic for years, and it's not as busy anymore because there's a little alley around the corner with a great, you know, ramen shop, and it's pulling people in. I love ramen too. It's pulling people in because they have a great digital presence. So trade show, same thing, right? Not just depending on, oh, somebody looking up, but the person who's looking down at their phone and going, oh, you know, I got to go over to booth number 304 because they're doing this really cool demo. So that's one thing sponsors are looking for, is how are you going to drive people, or how can I drive people to my own booth to compete with the other folks there? And the second is, how can I amplify the message so that I can reach people who are not physically here at my booth? Maybe they never make it to my booth, although they're at the conference in their hotel room, or maybe they're not even at the conference. And so we've done a lot of work, and I'm noticing clients that are experimenting with this, Periscope, Facebook Live, Twitter quizzes, creating content so that if you follow that topic, but you aren't physically there, you have an experience. We had a client, this was a computer sciences corporation. We worked with them at a healthcare conference. And our client was at the airport, like, I think it was a week later. And somebody saw her bag and said, oh, I saw CSC. I saw you guys at HIMSS. And she's like, oh, really? You know, who did you talk to? And she's like, oh, no, I saw you all over social media. Huh. And she knew content. I mean, I couldn't have planted that person in the airport to tell her that if I had tried to scheme and do that. And it just showed the impact of people seeing stuff, feeling like they know what's going on. And if you see content on social media, it's just like when you see ads around, you're kind of like, oh, they must be big, right? Like sometimes you have this feeling that it's bigger than you realize because you're just seeing it around. You're like, yeah, I've noticed that. Well, you can target people and they notice you on social, and then they know more about what you're doing and they feel a larger presence, even though maybe you don't have that large of a presence. Maybe you didn't invest very much because you did really targeted social media ads, but you paid for the cheaper booth, but you invested that money in a way to reach them digitally. So sponsors are looking for that traffic, I find. They're looking to amplify the message outside of the event space, capture content and distribute content outside of the space so they can get a long tail benefit from it.
Interesting. Talk about, so you've touched on, you know, Periscope, Facebook Live, and it's so interesting because a year ago everyone was talking about Meerkat. And yeah. You don't even hear that anymore.
Yeah, no.
So what are the current trends? I mean, what are the platforms? What are the ways to do this now that, what are people engaging with and using as tools?
Well, definitely video and motion graphics are picking up.
Which are happening through, like, Facebook Live or?
Well, so just in general, if you just look at content on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, years ago, you could only have static graphics, you could link to video, but you'd have to click it to watch it. Well, now, if I upload a video clip directly into any of those platforms and I'm scrolling on my mobile device, it will automatically start playing. And when I see that motion, it catches my attention. I think it entices. I mean, that's one of the areas I think where I use that. And so you are seeing a lot more motion graphics and video. With live, you are seeing much more live video. So Periscope, so Meerkat and Periscope came out roughly around the same time. Periscope, because of the connection to Twitter, I mean, really has done better. So you don't hear much about Meerkat anymore. It might be popular in certain pockets. And people like this idea of watching. I mean, we did a Periscope of something at a healthcare conference, and over 600 people watched it. And it was just an experiment. It was a speech. And, you know, it was great. It was very successful, and we could see people commenting. It was the right audience. Facebook Live is very fast-growing. You're seeing some very interesting things happen from normal, what you would expect live of, you know, it's speech or it's something happening, to some interesting things where it will be like an entire day-long stream of Facebook Live that's trying to get people to comment and have conversations. That is like there was one that was a candle of a presidential candidate, and it said, watch this candidate melt down in real time. And it was just literally, it's like watching water, you know, heat up to boil. I mean, it was just watching a candle. But it was sort of a funny, clever thing. So you had all these people reposting it and streaming it and commenting on it. And so I think the live, and what's great about Facebook Live and social media in general, is you can create a backstage pass for people to have part of the experience at your conference. If they're at the conference, you can literally take them backstage. But even if they're not at the conference, they can have this experience of being there that they couldn't have otherwise. And it's pretty cool how you can do that.
Any predictions of what's happening in the space kind of in the short and long term? You know, how is this going to evolve?
Yeah. I mean, targeting is becoming a much more sophisticated. There was an interesting article I saw recently about digital advertising trends. All of the growth and digital advertising has come from Facebook and Google, basically. They have basically driven all of the growth in digital advertising. They're capturing all the revenue. And actually, a number of other digital advertising companies are losing market share. They're not growing their revenue. And so I think that you're going to continue to see a lot of spending. What is very exciting from my perspective about especially what Facebook allows you to do is you can promote organic content. It's not just ad copy. So I can retweet something that an attendee said about my conference, how much they enjoyed it, and I can pay to promote that retweet to people who are in my target audience. So I'm promoting and boosting, and you know, there's different words for it, sponsoring organic content. And that is very different from the traditional advertising model. And if you don't put people at the center, you don't get that content. And so the traditional approach of just, you know, oh, I'm going to come up with a slogan or a jingle and I'm going to, you know, create great creative and I'm going to interrupt people with it, it's not working the same way anymore. And you can just see that simply by how the advertising dollars are going to, you know, Facebook and Google. I mean, that's not your typical TV ad there.
No, I mean, we're doing it now too. I mean, yeah. It's both for us personally as an organization as well as for our clients looking at that and just making those suggestions to them.
Yeah.
Very effective. Okay, so last question. How does one stay current in this space? You know, to sort of understand, sort of, are there trade magazines around this? How to use digital content effectively at an event? Are there resources that you rely on? Are there, you know, resources that they can rely on?
I think it's a lot of talking and a lot of doing. I think you have to experiment.
Rely on millennials in their organizations.
Yeah, I mean, that can be good to expose to new trends. At the same time, the younger people who understand the tools may not have the best understanding of how those tools relate to business strategy. So that's one of the tricks people get in, you know. They get a intern to run their social media for their company, and would you have done that with your accounting intern, like have them be your CFO? So that can be, I think, a challenge. But I would say it's great to connect with other industries and see what they're doing. It's great to just experiment with the tools. When Snapchat, you know, started to become more popular, Thomas and I were both, you know, playing around with it and, you know, for fun, but also, you know, we've got to understand this stuff. We have to advise our clients. They're asking us questions. And one of the things we discovered along the way was that pretty much all of our employees were on Snapchat. And we realized that is a very powerful channel that we could use to communicate certain things because, you know, Thomas especially, you know, as the CEO, is out of the office a lot. But a lot of times he's out doing very cool, important things. He's at meetings. This week he's on like a delegation to Spain. And so he launched a Snapchat account really with anybody can follow it, but the intention is to communicate with our employees. So he talks about important announcements and things that are going on with our employees on Snapchat. And people reply, people engage. And, you know, it seems to me, I mean, anecdotally, that the retention of some of that information might even be better than if we just sent out an all-staff email. So trying different things. This is a time where we have to experiment. And that's the great thing about digital and social is, you know, you can try things and see what works. I love to look at what others are doing for inspiration, but I say a lot, innovate, don't imitate. If you try to just copy exactly what somebody else is doing, you know, there's circumstances and strategy and customers are different from yours, so it usually doesn't get you the result that you're looking for, but you can use it for inspiration, tailor it to your own strategy, and that's when I think you can see really great results.
Anthony, cannot thank you enough. It's been such a pleasure. It's so informative. You know, and again, this is still new, I mean, to a lot of people and certainly to the events community and how executives are looking at their events. So really helpful. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
There's so much more to cover, and we'll have to have you back again. In our next episode, we'll be doing a short question round. In the meantime, if you have more questions for myself or for Anthony, go ahead and email us at eventceo@lynderglobal.com. Thanks for listening, and until next time, make your days great.
You can follow Event CEO on Twitter and Instagram at @event_CEO and on Facebook at Event CEO Podcast. Show notes for this episode can be found at www.lynderglobal.com/podcast.